All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world. Happy Monday, everybody, and may the 4th be with you. Today's May 4th, 2026, and our top story this morning, oil was up, and then it was down. And stocks were down, and then they were up. And the dollar was up, and then it was down. And the grand old Duke of York and all that other. What is going on this morning? 6 a.m. Eastern Time. The story breaks in Iranian state media that a United States Navy ship was hit by two missiles. Actually said a frigate was hit by two missiles in the Strait of Hormuz, trying to transit the Strait of Hormuz with all the typical Iranian propaganda bluster and the infidels and the Zionists and all that other crap too. Okay, 6 a.m. The Iranians say they hit our boat. 6:30. Okay, at 6 a.m., oil rips on that news. Stocks drop on that news. The dollar gets stronger on that news, consistent with a higher price of oil. The dollar's kind of trading in tandem with oil these days. 6:30 comes out, and the U.S. denies the story. No, they didn't hit our ship. Notice they didn't say they didn't shoot at our ship. They said they didn't hit our ship. And so oil starts to lose some of its gains. The dollar starts to lose some of its gains, and stocks start to recover some of their losses. So look, it's good. It's good news that they didn't hit our ship. I'm assuming they didn't hit our ship. I would like to think that the Navy wouldn't try to cover that up if that did happen. I don't know how you can hide a ship being hit, even if it did happen. But let's assume for a minute that the Iranians are full of shit, mostly because the Iranians are full of shit. Not that our guys aren't full of shit, but I think they're more so. Okay, all that being said, it doesn't matter because there's supposed to be a ceasefire. And if one guy is saying we fired, then there obviously isn't a ceasefire, or the ceasefire isn't worth the paper it's printed on, much like the Iranian currency, by the way. So look, things are worse in the Middle East to start Monday, and you know they're doing it wrong. Usually, like, your escalations happen on Friday, and we're like, oh, we're going to have our wars on the weekend, and then by Monday, everybody calms down. So they're doing it wrong. They're jawboning backwards today. This also comes after yesterday when Project Freedom was announced. Project Freedom is this U.S. proposal to restore freedom of navigation in the Strait of Hormuz. There's conflicting accounts of will it or won't it include U.S. destroyers escorting ships through the strait. I really hope they don't do it. Our boats are good and our sailors are very good at what they do. But sooner or later, something gets through. And if you're going to sail right up against their coast, you're making it easier on them. That is a stupid thing to do. So we don't really know if they're going to do some kind of escort or not. Several ships were hit in the strait and around the strait yesterday. Several merchant ships were hit by projectiles. I'm assuming that means Iranian missiles or drones. There was one ship was attacked by Iranian small boats. No word of any casualties or anything. So, look, the ceasefire, it's basically a farce at this point. Okay, so as all of this is going on, we've got Beijing is now telling their firms not to comply with U.S. sanctions on Chinese refiners that are buying Iranian oil. So this is kind of interesting. Back in 2021, the Chinese passed this law that gave Chinese companies a way to sue other Chinese companies in Chinese court if Chinese companies obey U.S. sanctions. Then the other company that is sanctioned can basically try to get redress. What this is we're saying, okay, we're sanctioning your company, and the Iranians are saying, nah, now it's up to us. Are we going to escalate? Are we going to put secondary sanctions on companies that are not obeying the primary sanctions? And if you keep doing that, and eventually you escalate, and we're right back to October 9th, 2025, following Liberation Day. So the Chinese are poking us after we poke them. So there's pokes going around back and forth. Spirit Airlines is officially dead. He's dead, Jim. Spirit Airlines, you may recall, was kind of on the fence. They were asking the government for a bailout. And then shortly after the story broke that they were possibly negotiating a $500 million rescue package with the Trump administration, a few days later, everybody, all the other budget airlines, had their hand out as well. And then they realized, okay, if you feed one, the next thing you know, they're all at your door. Well, I guess they just decided to let it die. Spirit shut down effective immediately over the weekend. 15,000 people losing their jobs there. Look, Spirit Airlines was a long time coming. It's a garbage business model. This company filed bankruptcy twice in the last 4 years. They were They tried to merge with, I think it was JetBlue, they tried to merge with. That merger was rejected on antitrust grounds. I think we can safely assume that Spirit won't be having a monopoly on the airline industry. That wasn't really a great move to block that merger, but let's be honest, it was higher jet fuel prices that were the final nail in the coffin that killed Spirit. The company was dying a long time here, and it was just like, okay, the higher jet fuel was the pillow over the face that just put it out of its misery. They were talking about possibly emerging under a Chapter 11 reorganization, which would have allowed them to continue operating. Then jet fuel prices skyrocketed, and they said, nope, just let it die, sell everything, liquidate Spirit, it's gone. GameStop, this story is kind of wild. GameStop is trying to buy eBay for $56 billion. And my question is, are they bidding on it, or are they trying to use the buy it now function? I don't know, but look, GameStop, the video game business, the reselling video game business is dead. GameStop pivoted to things more like collectibles years ago to try to rebuild their business after they got all that capital from the short squeeze. Now they're trying to buy eBay, which I'll be honest with you, you've got a dying business trying to buy another dying business. Maybe they can form some kind of dying business Voltron and things will work out really well for them. I don't really know what the strategy is here. Also, eBay's four or five times the size of GameStop. So how is GameStop going to buy them? Issuing a bunch of shares and taking on a bunch of debt, which, well, we'll have to see how that one works out. eBay, though, is ripping on this news. We've got Fed Governor Michael Barr is out this morning. Kind of an unusual story here. He's got a warning about private credit. And he's saying the same kind of stuff that I would say. And that's significant. When Fed governors are talking like Jack, you should take notice, because Fed governors are usually like, well, based on the totality of the economic data, we believe that everything is fine and strong and resilient and that there is no crisis. And well, no, he's talking my game this morning. Maybe I should sue for copyright infringement. Hey, that's my shtick, Michael Barr. Anyways, pay attention to that one. And as private credit is being talked about at the Federal Reserve, we've got Brown University has dumped more than half of their stake in Blue Owl's OBDC private credit fund. That's the publicly traded one, the one that trades way below the advertised value that Blue Owl talks about. Not to be confused with the non-traded business development companies at Blue Owl, where they told people you can't have your money back. They locked everybody inside. So the people who can sell private credit, they are selling private credit. Big drop at Brown University. We've got this story out of Abu Dhabi that's pretty interesting. Ream Finance has secured a charter from authorities in the UAE to become Ream Bank. Okay, why do you care about Ream Bank becoming a community bank in Abu Dhabi? Well, you should care, because it involves the spy sheik. And hot dog, is that a cool freaking nickname? I mean, it's no Melonhead, but it's a cool freaking nickname. And there is a lot happening geopolitically, and it all centers around the UAE recently. A lot of stories we've been talking about with the UAE, and a lot of it involves President Trump and his personal business dealings, and this story is no different. So we're going to talk about what's going on in Abu Dhabi with Ream Finance, a.k.a. Ream Bank, this morning. We've also got Berkshire Hathaway. Their cash pile is now $397 billion. It's T-Bill and Chill over at Berkshire Hathaway, one of the best investors, Warren Buffett in all time, who's not actually at the helm, although he's still talking and supporting the new leadership over there. They're basically saying T-Bill and Chill is where we live. The market is a casino. These valuations are laughable, and they're not playing. Again, kind of sounding an awful lot like Jack this morning. The Wall Street Journal is showing us how almost everybody loses on Polymarket. Danger, danger, Will Robinson. Melonheads, we do not play on prediction markets. It is a mechanism of wealth extraction. And we've got even more data to support that this morning. And last but not least, we at least have to mention the bank failure that happened on Friday evening. Of course, banks always fail on Friday, right? That's just less of an incident that way. I did a video about this last night. I will throw a link down in the description below to that one. You're not going to want to miss that one. Was it the morally onerous chef that failed the bank? Or was it the Uber drivers borrowing against their tax return? Or was it the AI bros selling courses or the PPP pumper? Who knows what failed this bank? Any of the above, all of the above. This bank was a dumpster fire waiting to happen. Guys, we got a lot to talk about. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. But first, don't hit or don't forget to hit that like button and that subscribe button for you new guys. So you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the Melonheads, because we do this every single business day. And right there in the chart of the S&P 500, you can see the dip and then the buyback on the news. 6 a.m. Eastern time, that's when the Iranians were like, the great victory for the holy warriors or whatever the heck kind of propaganda crap they're doing. And then 6:30, the U.S. says, no, they didn't hit our boat, and the stocks come back up. Notice they didn't come all the way back up. They only gained most of it, because the fact that we're even having this conversation is news, because we're not supposed to be shooting at each other where there's a ceasefire. And when one side is saying we shot and hit, and then the other guys are saying, no, they didn't hit us, we're kind of glossing over the fact that they're shooting again. So stocks, the S&P 500 down 14 points, 0.2% in the red. Same thing going on over in the Dow, same shape of the curve, 181 points to the south for the Dow Jones this morning, or about a third of a percent lower. And the NASDAQ just barely negative. It was positive for most of the morning, but now down 3 points, 0.02% in the red. So stocks not having such a good morning on this news. You can even see that little blip in the DXY chart looking at the strength of the dollar. We had the dollar strengthen a little bit at 6 a.m. And again, that's driven mostly by higher oil prices. Oil is traded in dollars. So if oil prices go up, people need more dollars. They better sell some of their own currency to buy more dollars to buy the oil. So the dollar strengthens when oil rips. Then it'd come out and they're like, no, the Iranians are full of it. And it goes pretty much right back down. But you'll notice it didn't go down as low as it was. Some of those gains sticked because they're like, yeah, it looks like the ceasefire ain't holding. DXY is at 98.35, higher by 19 basis points. Looking over at the bond market, we have got yields are marginally higher this morning. The 30-year yield is at 4.980. That's up by almost a point and a half. The 10-year is at 4.402, up by almost 2.5 points. The 2-year, 3.923%, up by 3.5 points. And the 1 month is unchanged at 3.665%. Looking at Bitcoin, we're pretty much unchanged versus yesterday, $78,632 as priced on Coinbase for Bitcoin. And looking at the commodities board, we've got metals are red this morning. Spot gold is down $51.50, almost $52, $4,563 for spot gold, or 1.12% lower. Spot silver is at $73.61. That is lower by $1.74, or 2.35% lower. July COMEX silver futures are at $74.04. That's lower by $2.37, or about 3%. Silver not looking so good this morning, but I still like the shiny. And you know what? I really like the shiny in the 60s. If we get down below that 70 threshold, I might take a look and start buying. The last metal I bought was at 60. I got real nervous when we broke 100. Hey, I own a lot of metal, and I owned a lot of silver ETFs and things like that were doing really well, but I could tell it wasn't real when we were getting up into the 120s. I was saying, guys, this is ridiculous. You got chatbots making up fake stories that make people want to buy silver. I'm not buying this crap. It didn't last, but now we're getting down into a price where I might be interested again soon. So we'll keep that one in. We'll keep an eye on silver there. Copper down 1.25%. Platinum 1.8% lower. Palladium 3.7% lower. And crude oil is now at $103.29, higher by $1.35, or 1.3%. Let's take a look at the oil chart. These are now minute candles that we're looking at here. And again, you can see the story with the Iranians here. There's the story. The Iranians are like a great victory for the holy warriors. Okay. Oil spikes. We go from about 100 and where were we? About 100, just under 103 to as high as 107.45. So we had a $4, almost $5 spike in oil. 30 minutes goes by as the U.S. comes out and they deny the story. And about half of those gains disappear. And now over the last couple of minutes, we've seen this head lower. We've had a couple of other developments. We had some stories from CENTCOM came out. We'll read those in just a minute here. Some change in rules of engagement. So oil now just barely positive for the day, 102.87 now. By the way, shout out to Charlie Bolello, who posted this one. Gas prices in the U.S. have moved up to an average of $4.46 per gallon. That's according to AAA as of today, the highest level since July of 2022, the last time we were dumping hundreds of millions of barrels from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. The 50% spike over the last 9 weeks, $2.98 a gallon to $4.46 a gallon, is the biggest we've seen in the past 30 years. Take a look at that chart. That is significant here, guys. And remember, when we were around here, it was about 2-3 weeks ago, we got that headline about consumer confidence being the lowest in history. And it was like in the 50-year history of consumer confidence, it had never been so low. Well, that was about 50 cents a gallon of gasoline ago, which means it's probably even worse. This is a chart of the stress on the average U.S. consumer getting worse and worse. This is things getting worse for the pizza industry. We've been talking about how like Domino's and Pizza Hut both posted terrible results. People are eating out less. They're having to make cuts elsewhere to account for the more expensive gas. All right, so here's the article coming at, talking about what happened this morning. U.S. denies Iran report that naval ship was hit by missiles. The U.S. denied a report by Iranian media on Monday that the country had struck an American naval vessel with missiles, Axios reported, citing a senior official. Oil prices and stocks pared back some of their earlier moves. Brent crude had jumped around 5% to over $113 a barrel, and stocks fell after Fars reported a strike on a U.S. frigate near the Gulf of Oman port of Jask following ignored warnings from the Islamic Republic's Navy. The U.S. boat was forced to retreat and flee the area, Fars reported, citing unnamed sources who were probably full of it. It's also important to note that the United States frigate or the United States Navy does not operate any frigates. We don't have any officially designated frigates in the U.S. Navy. The closest thing to a frigate we have is the littoral combat ship. So maybe they shot at a littoral combat ship. It looks like it was a destroyer that they were actually shooting at. We'll show in a little bit here. Shortly before, Tasnim, another Iranian news agency, announced the government had redefined the control zone in the Strait of Hormuz and effectively set out maritime borders within which Tehran would regulate shipping traffic. The developments added to tensions hours after President Trump said the U.S. will help ships stranded in the Persian Gulf transit the strait, describing it as a humanitarian gesture. The operation, dubbed Project Freedom, was set to begin on Monday with the U.S. military pledging to provide support, including the use of guided missile destroyers, aircraft, and drones. The ship movement is merely meant to free up people, companies, and countries that have done absolutely nothing wrong. They are victims of circumstance, Trump wrote late Sunday in a social media post. If in any way this humanitarian process is interfered with, that interference will unfortunately have to be dealt with forcefully. Trump said some of the ships stranded in the Persian Gulf have large crews that are running out of food while they're waiting for safe passage through Hormuz. He said that several countries have asked the U.S. for help in freeing up their ships. The plan has left shipping executives perplexed with few details provided by the president. Iran's military, after Trump's announcements, had said U.S. forces would be attacked if they entered the Strait of Hormuz, according to a statement carried out by Iranian broadcaster Press TV. All right, so we've got this Project Freedom. We're going to help the boats get out. The Iranians said, don't do that or we'll shoot at you. Again, nice ceasefire you got there. And then this morning, we got this one from CENTCOM following these conflicting reports. U.S. Central Command, U.S. Navy guided missile destroyers are currently operating in the Arabian Gulf after transiting the Strait of Hormuz in support of Project Freedom. The Arabian Gulf and the Persian Gulf, it's the same thing. But the Persians are the Iranians, the Arabs are like the Saudis and the UAE. So I guess CENTCOM is kind of like Gulf of America-ing Iran right now. Why, instead of the Arabian Gulf or the Persian Gulf, let's just call it Gulf of America Junior. I don't know. But American forces are actively assisting efforts to restore transit for commercial shipping. As a first step, two U.S.-flagged merchant vessels have successfully transited through the Strait of Hormuz and are safely headed on their journey. That's according to this post on X from U.S. CENTCOM. All right, so this is interesting. So they're saying two destroyers, or destroyers, plural, transited the Strait of Hormuz. They're currently operating in the Arabian Gulf or the Persian Gulf. All right, so then there's at least some credibility to the fact that we said we were going to send boats in. The Iranians said, if you do it, we'll shoot at you. The next morning, the Iranians say, we hit two boats. Now we're saying, well, we went in. So it looks like we sent these destroyers through and the Iranians shot at them. Did they hit us or not? Let's assume they didn't for the time being. Now, the other interesting thing here, they're saying U.S.-flagged merchant vessels have successfully transited through the strait and are safely headed on their journey. That would almost suggest we escorted ships into the Gulf, not out of. If we sent two boats in, So I don't know. There's a lot we could interpret here. Ships are going through and they're getting shot at. There were several other civilian ships were shot at over the weekend too. Guys, the oil market here is just whistling past the graveyard. This is the biggest supply shock since the 1970s, arguably bigger than the supply shock of the 1970s. Oil sitting here at 100, what were we again, $102 a barrel, largely, in my opinion, due to governments intervening in treasury and in futures markets. I'll be honest with you, I'm a little encouraged by the spirit shutdown because at the very least that shows that consumption habits are starting to change. But the fact that we're blocking higher prices when they should be a heck of a lot higher means consumption habits aren't changing enough in order to avoid severe shortages that I think we're going to just crash into at full speed if we don't let these futures prices rise. And I'm in no hurry to see Americans have more stress because of higher gas prices. But again, price is key to determining consumption based on scarcity. When the government blocks those signals, bad things happen. All right, also going on, according to Axios, the rules of engagement for U.S. forces operating in and around the Strait of Hormuz, forces have been authorized to strike any immediate threats in the local region, including Iranian boats and missile positions. So again, further credibility to the fact that there was some exchange of missile fire this morning because the U.S. is changing the rules of engagement, allowing our boats to go on offense if they're shot at, not just intercept the missiles, but shoot back. That is a new development. As that goes on, Beijing tells China firms to ignore U.S. sanctions on refiners. China has ordered companies in the country not to comply with U.S. sanctions on five domestic refiners linked to the Iranian oil trade, deploying a blocking measure introduced in 2021 that was aimed at protecting its firms from foreign laws it deemed unjustified. The refiners, including Hengli Petrochemical, or the Dalian Refinery, was sanctioned last month, and several other privately owned processors had been facing asset freezes and transaction bans. The U.S. measures unlawfully restrict normal trade with third countries and breach international norms, the country's commerce ministry said in a statement on Saturday. In a rare move, it issued an order banning recognition, enforcement, and compliance with the sanctions aimed at the five companies. The Chinese government has consistently opposed unilateral sanctions that lack authorization from the United Nations and a basis in international law. So yeah, China is going to keep buying Iranian crude. The refineries primarily work with Chinese banks that have not yet been directly sanctioned. The analyst led by Dominic Chu wrote in a note, if the U.S. extends secondary sanctions to those institutions or major state-owned entities, Beijing would likely respond with more forceful countermeasures. So they're saying here, you've got this escalation ladder. Okay, we put these sanctions on. They're not obeying the sanctions. Well, we could sanction the people not obeying the sanctions, but then Beijing would probably sanction us back. Round and round we go. Next thing you know, 145% tariffs on everything. China has long been the single largest buyer of Tehran's oil shipments, many of them arriving indirectly and through private refiners, and then turned into gasoline, diesel, and other oil products. Chinese customs data do not reflect that trade, with the last official shipment recorded several years ago. Yeah, right. China's been buying that oil the whole time. Spirit says most customers refunded after an abrupt shutdown. It is officially dead. Spirit Airlines said on Sunday it had almost completed refunding passengers and returning its crew to their home bases following its decision to cease operations over the weekend. Spirit abruptly canceled flights early on Saturday morning, stranding passengers and staff around the U.S., the Caribbean, and Latin America after collapsing under financial pressures that included a sharp rise in fuel costs due to the Iran war. The carrier had more than 4,000 domestic flights scheduled through May 15th, according to data from analytics firm Cirium. Most customers who booked with credit or debit cards were refunded by Saturday evening, with a small percentage still being processed. The airline had filed for bankruptcy twice after a proposed merger with JetBlue was blocked by the administration of former President Joe Biden in 2024. They were bleeding money, and so this was in the works for some time. They were going to have to liquidate, said U.S. Transport Secretary Sean Duffy on ABC's This Week. So Spirit's death was a long time coming. It was the higher jet fuel prices that ultimately killed them, but they would have died anyway. And this one's got a lot of people scratching their head this morning as well. Meme stock GameStop pitches $56 billion takeover of eBay. What the heck is going on here? GameStop. GameStop. I always say GameStock. I don't know. It's just a verbal thing. GameStop is proposing to buy eBay for about $56 billion in cash and stock, a bold attempt by Ryan Cohen to take over a storied e-commerce name several times larger. The gaming retail chain offered $125 per share in cash and stock for the online marketplace, or about a 20% premium to its Friday close. GameStop, which built a roughly 5% stake in eBay, said it secured an initial non-binding, highly confident letter from TD Bank to provide $20 billion of debt financing. Somebody want to tell me what a highly confident, non-binding letter is? I mean, I guess it's good that it's not meekly confident. Or is that better than a meekly confident yet binding letter? I don't know. TD Bank might give them $20 billion to help with this merger. In a memo to investors on Sunday, Cohen's company pledged to find some $2 billion of annual savings within 12 months of closing. Trust me, bro. eBay stock surged about 10% in pre-market trading in New York on Monday, through to about $114, substantially below that $125 value of the offer. In a sign that investors see hurdles to completing a deal, GameStop stood largely unchanged. Cohen is now proposing to take over a company roughly four times larger than the retail chain he operates. GameStop has a market value of $12 billion as of Friday. eBay was much bigger at around $46 billion, though the game retailer has about $9 billion in cash. The takeover offer is split evenly between cash and GameStop common stock. Both companies have struggled to adapt to changing consumer preferences. GameStop has shut stores and emphasized collectible toys and trading cards as more video games get purchased online. eBay, too, has been pushing collectibles and use goods on its own marketplace, creating a business overlap. eBay stock is ripping this morning, $111.29. That's up by $7 or 7% here. But again, the offer was $125 and it's only trading at $111. So the market is saying we are very doubtful that this deal ever goes through here. Let's just take a look at GME while we're at it. GameStop stock is currently negative by 5.8%, trading at $24.98, giving up most of Friday's gains here. So we'll keep an eye on this merger. I think we're probably going to be hearing about this one for a couple of weeks. It'll take a while to close, if at all. Meanwhile, private credit could spark psychological contagion, Barr warns. This is unusual language from a Fed governor this morning. Federal Reserve Governor Michael Barr said stress in private credit could spark psychological contagion, leading to a broader credit crunch, once again warning against loosening the reins on Wall Street at a time of rising risks. In an interview with Bloomberg News, Barr said that while direct links between banks and private credit did not yet appear super worrisome, there were other areas of concerns, such as in the insurance sector's overlaps with private lenders. We've been documenting on this channel how these private equity firms and private debt or private credit firms have bought insurance companies and then sold their dog shit assets to the balance sheets of those insurance companies. So, there's a lot of overlap between private credit and insurance now. Then you also have the problem of kind of psychological contagion, he said. People might look at private credit, and instead of saying this is an idiosyncratic problem, these were high-risk loans, the rest of the corporate sector is different. They might say, wow, there seems to be cracks in our corporate sector. Maybe over here in the corporate bond market, there are also cracks. So he's worried about contagion risk to the bond market, where a lot of companies turn to private credit instead of the bond market because they could get favorable financing here, then you have a credit pullback, and that could lead to more financial strain. But Barr also is concerned about payment-in-kind structures, where interest is paid by creating new loans. And again, this is something I've been warning about for months, well over a year now, talking about payment-in-kind. Basically, that just means that you default on your loan, and it's not counted as a default. So that's worrisome. You can't look at the book and know which loans are really actually under stress, he said. Now that's significant, guys. All right, to have a Fed governor calling out PIC and correct. Barr is absolutely correct to do so, but that's my job, right? Warning about things that the finance sector is basically extending and pretending, lying, covering up defaults, all right? That's the kind of stuff that YouTubers with too much time on their hand and, you know, those meddling kids talk about. It's not usually something you see a sitting Fed governor worried about. So that's significant. That is this problem going more mainstream. And I agree wholeheartedly with Michael Barr this morning. And so does Brown University, apparently, because they're getting the heck out of Dodge. Brown University slashed their stake in Blue Owl's private credit fund. Brown University's $8 billion endowment cut its position in a Blue Owl Capital private credit fund by more than half last quarter, joining retail investors in scaling back exposure to the $1.8 trillion market. Brown reduced its stake in Blue Owl Capital Corp, one of the firm's publicly traded business development companies. This is OBDC, by 1.7 million shares, down to 1.52 million. So they sold more than half of it. That's according to a regulatory filing on Friday. It also holds 2.57 million shares of the parent company, which was unchanged from the end of 2025, according to 13F filings, which details its holdings of U.S. equities. By the way, Brown has taken a bath on those Blue Owl shares that they're still holding. That stock is way down. The university's move to slash its stake in Blue Owl's OBDC, while small in comparison to the endowment's total size, underscores the souring sentiment towards private credit and Blue Owl in particular that has marked the start of the year. The firm's non-traded credit funds saw unprecedented requests to exit in the first quarter, totaling more than $5 billion. And remember, Blue Owl halted redemptions in that fund. And then this OBDC, that's their other fund, the one that's publicly traded. That's the one that Brown dumped more than half of their shares. Of course, that trades at a huge discount to net asset value, which means the open market does not agree with Blue Owl's assessment of what the loans in that fund are worth. Brown last year took out two private loans, one for $500 million and another for $300 million. After the school previously warned of deep financial challenges. Now, I don't know if that was related to some of the funding freezes from the Trump administration that were happening last year, but Brown's got financial problems. If they borrowed almost $1 billion to make ends meet last year, and they're sitting on these private credit funds that are way down and dumping them. And it turns out it's not just Brown here. The endowment at Dartmouth College, another Ivy League institution, exited its position in Blue Owl's OBDC in the last quarter of 2025, regulatory filings show. It had previously held more than 3 million shares. Dartmouth dumped all of it. So you got big Ivy League school endowments, which are like hedge funds with a college attached. They are getting out of private credit, just as the Federal Reserve warns about it. All right, check out this one. Abu Dhabi's Judan signals growing ambitions with digital bank. Oh, a digital bank. What's the worst thing that could happen? A finance firm that's part of Abu Dhabi's Judan Financial has converted into a digital bank, underscoring the $237 billion financial services holding company's growing ambitions. Ream Finance has secured a community banking license from the Central Bank of the United Arab Emirates, according to a statement on Monday. Operating as Ream Bank, it will target segments including small and medium-sized enterprises, fintechs, and digital wallets. International Holding Co., a conglomerate led by Sheikh Tanun bin Zayed Al Nahyan, the UAE's national security advisor and brother to the country's president, created Judan in February, combining businesses spanning banking, insurance, asset management, alternative investments, and financial technology under one umbrella. As part of that move, asset managers Chimera Investment and the $115 billion Lunate Capital, as well as brokerage International Securities, were folded under Judan. All right, so why should you care about this? It's the involvement of this guy, Sheikh Tanun bin Zayed Al Nahyan, the UAE's national security advisor and brother to the country's president. This guy is known as the spy sheikh, and he has gotten very cozy with the Trump administration, or I should say the Trump family, over the last few years or months. The spy sheikh took out a $500 million equity stake when he bought almost half of World Liberty Financial back in 2025, or 2024, I think is when he did it, shortly before President Trump took office. Right? He's a major shareholder in World Liberty Financial, which has all kinds of controversy surrounding them right now, with the Justin Sun drama and what they did to the Dolomite platform and locking up investors while borrowing against and dumping tokens. All right, the spy sheikh is heavily involved in that. And the UAE just left OPEC. They just arrested Daniel Kinahan, who's been wanted by the West for years, and he was hiding in plain sight. And the UAE is on the U.S. side in the war, kind of. And what else? Oh, yeah, the UAE is asking for dollar swap lines from the U.S. Treasury. And then you've got this spy sheikh, the security advisor, the brother of the president, who's buddy-buddy with the Trumps, and his finance firm is now got a bank license, which might suggest that they would also benefit from those dollar swaps that the U.S. Treasury is currently considering for the UAE. Keep an eye on this one. Watch out for this spy sheet guy. Something tells me we'll be talking about him a lot in the future. All right, we got Berkshire Hathaway is now sitting on a record $397 billion in cash, and it's not the only firm reluctant to invest in the stock market. Paul Tudor Jones also recently warned on valuations as hedge funds back away. Berkshire Hathaway has been waving a big yellow caution flag in front of investors this weekend after the giant conglomerate revealed it's sitting on its biggest ever cash pile of $397 billion. We've been talking about this for a year. Berkshire has been selling and building up cash for several years now, and it just keeps getting bigger. $397 billion. I just don't know where I'm going to put it all. Somebody at Berkshire is saying we need a bigger boat. At his first annual meeting as CEO of Berkshire on Saturday, Greg Abel justified that holding, largely U.S. Treasury bills. It's not that we don't see exceptional companies out there today that we'd love to own, but the price relative to the opportunity, the economic prospects of that company, and the related risks, we're not interested in acquiring those companies at that price. He's saying the market's too expensive right now, and I agree with him. There will be dislocations in markets that again allow us to act, Abel said, suggesting anything he might buy today will probably be cheaper tomorrow. Chiming in during an interview with CNBC, Chairman Warren Buffett told CNBC that the stock market has become more of a casino. You got that right, Warren. If you're buying one-day options or selling them, I mean, that's not investing. That's not speculating. It's gambling, he said. So we've never had people in a more gambling mood than now, but that doesn't mean investing is terrible. That does mean that prices for an awful lot of things will look very silly. And I agree wholeheartedly with Berkshire Hathaway's sentiment here. And speaking of gambling is everywhere, why almost everyone loses except a few sharks on prediction markets. I've been warning about this, guys. This is now the second time we've covered this. Danger, these are 100% rigged markets. You're trading against people with better information than you. They talk about anecdotes here of this guy who got wiped out. Kalshi and its competitor Polymarket advertises themselves as life-changing tools for regular people, implying everyone has a fair chance to score. I was about to be unable to pay my rent, but I got 2 years of rent through Kalshi predictions, gushed one woman in Kalshi's ad on TikTok. But for most users, the reality is nothing like that. Instead, casual traders are bleeding cash, while a small number of sophisticated pros, including trading firms with access to vast streams of data, eat their lunch, according to a journal analysis of the platform data and interviews with traders. On Polymarket, the journal found 67% of all profits go to just 0.1% of accounts. That means less than 2,000 accounts netted a total of nearly $500 million. The journal analyzed 1.6 million Polymarket accounts that have traded since November 2022, and there are at least 2.3 million total accounts on the site. On Kalshi 2, losers vastly outnumber winners. Spokeswoman Elizabeth Diana said there are 2.9 unprofitable users for each profitable one based on data from the past month. Read that again. There are almost three losers for every winner. All right, so do you really like your odds in this place? She said the number is subject to change as the exchange grows. The company doesn't make public comprehensive data on users' profits and doesn't share its total number of users. Total trading volume on both platforms has rocketed to $24.2 billion in April, up from $1.8 billion a year earlier, according to analytics firm The Block. Guys, look at this. $24.2 billion, up from $1.8 billion a year ago. 24.2 over 1.8. A 13.4x increase in the number of people participating on these platforms. And for every one that wins, three lose. Again, this is wholesale wealth extraction from uninformed people. Danger, run, do not walk from the exits from these prediction markets. Get away from them, guys. Don't go there. And last but not least, if I might be so inclined to self-promote here, dumpster fire of a bank fails. We are talking about Community Bank and Trust of Georgia. It failed on Friday. It was taken into receivership by the FDIC. I had some fun digging into this one over the weekend, and I released a video last night. I'll put a link down below in the description of that video. You guys are not going to want to miss that one. You're going to shake your head at what they were doing at this bank. I don't know what specifically caused it, but they were doing so much shady crap. It could have been any of it. It could have been all of it. This bank was a dead man walking, a dumpster fire waiting to happen. So check that one out, of course. And I just want to say thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for you new guys. We'll see you tomorrow. Thank you very much to my magnanimous Melonheads on Patreon, YouTube, and Buy Me a Coffee for supporting the channel. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.